Following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad that you could join us once again. And before we get started, I just want to remind you that just because we discuss certain news or certain topics, tax strategies, real estate, private partnership, syndication opportunities, as we often do, it's not something we recommend you go try alone on your own. Please consult with your existing advisors and make sure that what you thought you heard and understood was correctly heard and understood, and that more importantly, it applies to your specific facts and circumstances. And if you don't have existing advisors, feel free to go to our website at baplanner.com. That's baplanner.com. And the first step, first form on that page, you'll see the link up at the top right, is a client profile form. And if you'll fill that out, and then right next to the form link is a call link. You can schedule a call, and be happy to spend some time on the phone with you to explain how we might or might not be able to help you meet your goals and objectives. By the way, I do get from time to time people that will submit a form or several of the forms there on our site that have to do with client intake, new client intake, and then don't schedule a call. And I guess I just wanted to clarify, we really want you to initiate that request for a call. Obviously, you can pick a spot on the calendar that will be convenient for you, and then we'll pick up and be happy to spend some time with you at no charge, of course, until we figure out what we can do. And then if you want to engage, that's when we'll ascertain a mutually agreeable price. In any event, I wanted to, I guess the first thing is remind everyone that we've got a tax filing deadline coming up Tuesday, the 15th. That's this coming Tuesday. And I would strongly suggest that if you're an investor or a business owner, you opt for an extension. You don't file. There's various and assorted reasons, but I'll just tell you again, if you're an investor or small business owner, and there's probably some other categories or subcategories, I would suggest to you the best practice is to extend and file at a later date. You want to get out of the harried condition that most CPAs or accountants or tax preparers are in right now, including yours truly. And further, with all the technology we have driving reporting these days, it's like anything else that technology takes control of. And not to say it wasn't the case before we had all the great technology we have. Mistakes get made, and they get accentuated. Maybe the rate or the size of those mistakes during peak periods of data flow, and even some of the tools that we have these days to automate scanning and OCRing and entering directly into software exacerbates the old problem of maybe your eyes as an accountant, your eyes didn't see something right, or you've got big fingers and you didn't type something right. Trust me, machines and software make problems too. And so then, and they don't just make problems on my computers, they make problems on Fidelity's and Bank of America. You just go down the list, we get, or we see corrected 1099s every year from the biggest players in the game, and no one's immune from mistakes. And it's like I tell my clients, hey, I don't want to do your return twice, and most of you don't want to pay me to do it twice. In fact, I don't know anybody that wants to do that. And if you understand how the process, the overall filing process works, you'll begin to understand why I and assorted other CPAs will tell you the best practice is to extend. You pay what you owe. You don't just don't show up for April 15th. You need to get your data to an accountant, and they need to estimate any unpaid amount so you can pay them. And the penalty is not as extreme as you might think. If you don't owe too much, it's basically you'll pay some interest in 0.5% per month of the additional tax, or part of the additional tax that might be due. It depends on the amount. But bottom line is, it's not the end of the world. You basically live to fight another day, potentially. And you might not owe anything if you normally don't owe extra this time of year, unless something's changed in your overall fact pattern. You probably don't owe now. I mean, it's typically, you know, as we say, Sally, same as last year. So anyway, if you have questions about that or want to ask about possibly working with us, feel free to connect. The best way to reach me is by text. You can send it to 713-782-1900. 713-782-1900. And I will endeavor to respond quickly. So anyway, let's turn to the news for the moment. And I was looking at an article from April the 7th. So when was that? Earlier this week. CBO, that's the Congressional Budget Office. This is on foxbusiness.com. And we've talked about this before. We didn't need Fox News or Fox Business to tell us this. This is something we watch constantly. Anybody that listens to this show knows we talk about the U.S. debt clock, .org site. We talk about the CBO 10-year forecast that gets updated all the time. And this article is about, I believe it, well, it would be the most recent update. Came out, I believe they're referring to the one that came out at the end of January, but this may have been updated even since then. But in any event, it's always, it's not interesting, it's sad. It's always sad to see just how far we've fallen in terms of our fiscal prowess. And but CBO, the title here, CBO says the U.S. budget deficits to widen, national debt to surge to 156% of gross domestic product. And for those of you that might not know what GDP is, gross domestic product, think of it, if it were a company, it'd be your top line sales. It's not I don't believe it's net income. I'm pretty sure it's top. Whatever it is, 150% or 56 is a sad state of affairs. Let me read down actually inside the article, because now that I asked myself that question, I'm pretty sure it's a gross number. Let's see. The CBO's budget forecasts that the debt held by the public as a percentage of gross domestic product, a metric favored by economists for comparing debt to economic output, is projected to rise from 100% this year. If that wasn't bad enough, 100% of this year to 156% of GDP by the year 2055. I know that sounds like it's a long way off, but it'll be here before we know it. And the problem is we're sitting at 100% right now. And by the way, that's not the total debt that's outstanding that we admit to. That's a much higher number. I've lost track of what it is as a percent of GDP, but I can tell you it's somewhere in the 150 to 180. Well, it depends on which economist you want to listen to. $150 trillion to $180 trillion, which is insane. But that's for programs that we've already approved, but they haven't kicked in yet to affect this current budgetary cycle. So it is as bad as we say it is from week to week. And, you know, it's amazing to me the resilience of the U.S. economy. And the fact that we alone, for the most part, are able to continue to print money and to print treasury bills, treasury bonds, and sell them to people around the world. A lot of them here at home, obviously. It's crazy. The faith that we put in that green and white or off-white paper. And, you know, I was talking to someone about crypto just the other day, and, you know, they were making it sound like it's, you know, it's as good or like the gold standard of yesteryear. And I don't know. You know, crypto, if we ever found a way to get rid of the volatility, it's like with many things, you know, the dollar is the enemy we know, and there's something more comfortable about the enemy you know than those that you think might be your friends but turn out not to be. And I think crypto comes and goes in a way, but I don't know. I'm not a crypto expert, don't own any interest in crypto, and I just marvel at times when I see people that, you know, on one date when we talked about it, they're higher than a kite, and the next time they're almost suicidal, you know, because of the exaggerated drops that can occur. Let's see, growth in the national debt continuing on, excuse me. Before we go to the next paragraph, if we hit 156% of GDP, I'm sorry, by 2055, that would be a full 50 percentage points higher than the current record, which is not, by the way, established by where we're at right now. We're at 100%, but it was set in 1946. As the U.S. began its post-World War II demobilization. So we spent a lot of money compared to GDP at the time, which, of course, is not nearly as high as it is now. Growth in the national debt will be driven by budget deficits widening from about 6.2% of GDP in 2025 to 7.3% in 2055, well above the 1995 to 2024 average of only 3.9%, if that wasn't high enough already. And we'll talk about that topic here later in the show in the context of the vote that just occurred yesterday in the House of Representatives that moves us just one step closer, where we got our big, beautiful reconciliation bill or package that Mr. Trump is desirous of, one step closer to reality. It's fairly remarkable. I don't care which side of the aisle you're on. It's your worst nightmare if you're on the left, and it's like unbelievable that the GOP, the Republicans, have managed to stay together. It's unprecedented, really, in recent times on this tax bill. Federal spending will continue to be driven by mandatory spending programs led by Social Security and Medicare amid the aging of America's population. Social Security spending is projected to rise from 5.2% of GDP this year to 6.1% in 2055, while the CBO sees Medicare spending rising from 3.1% to 5.8% of GDP in 2055. That's the one that's scary, because I believe, if I remember the number, it's like 12,800 people a day becoming eligible for Medicare, including yours truly. I became eligible earlier this month, and I tell you, the amount of money that we are spending on us old people is just striking. And the problem, you know, this article says it so nicely, you don't really think about the practical reality. When I read federal spending will continue, quote, amid the aging of America's population. What that means is there's a lot more of us old people out there than there are young ones coming into the workforce to pay into, or to have wages paid to them, where they are splitting with the employer the money that gets set aside for Medicare and Social Security. But Medicare is the one that, I mean, like the article says, it'll go from 3.1% of GDP up to 5.8%, and that's not because GDP is going to get lower. No, it's because we're going to spend more. And when you think about the fact that, you know, back when Social Security started, if I remember right, and I wasn't there, but if I remember the article, the statistics correctly, somewhere between 9 and 10 workers were paying into the system for every one worker that was getting paid benefits. Now it's somewhere between, I believe, 1.5 and 2 are paying for all the elderly now. And that will not work longer term. And in any event, it's a bad situation. Let's see, I wanted to talk about the Social Security Trust Fund, because that is going to be here before we know it, and people are going to wake up one morning and find their Social Security checks automatically are going to be reduced, somewhere between 23 and 25%. This article says 24, that's a good number, in 2034, and that's because Social Security's main trust funds are due to be depleted in less than 10 years, according to CBO, the Congressional Budget Office. It should be tapped out at the current rate that we're spending and interest rates and everything else that's involved. That's why it could vary by as little as 23%, which is still a lot, and as much as 25%. And then you've also got the issue of the Disability Insurance Trust Fund. That will impact when the funds run out as well. But when the Social Security Trust Fund is depleted, it will trigger an automatic benefit cut. It's already baked into law. It's already part of the statute or the regs. It'll trigger an automatic benefit cut for recipients. That's across the board. Everybody that's receiving a check will get 23% to 25% less starting in 2034. For a sense of proportion or context here, the Social Security Administration noted that the average monthly benefit as of January 2025 was $1,976, which would be reduced by $474 a month if a 24% cut to monthly benefits occurred. Striking. Medicare's Hospital Insurance Trust Fund is now projected to be depleted by 2052 after its outlook improved due to lower projected cost and higher revenue projections, though the projections are sensitive to economic conditions and are highly certain. You can say that again, are highly uncertain between employment numbers and the cost of medical care, which is just incredibly volatile. And I don't ever see it coming down, but I see it going up. I guess it doesn't go up as much in some years. Those are the good years, I believe, is what this thought process would come with. Another major driver of increased spending will be the net interest expenses, which are projected to rise from 32% of GDP to 5.4% in 2055 as the national debt continues to grow. By 2045, CBO projects the average interest rate on the national debt is expected to exceed the U.S. economy's growth rate. That's scary. And for those of you that may not be aware, you may have heard Mr. Elon Musk referred to it as of late, but we've been saying it now for at least a couple years, that the rate of interest expense was barreling towards the $1 trillion mark, and now it's over $1 trillion a year that we pay on interest towards the cumulative debt that we owe as a country. Over $1 trillion a year. That's more than we currently spend on defense. Defense is approximately, well, it's between $850 billion and $800 billion. But it's crazy to think that we're paying that much, more than that, in interest expense on the debt. Security risk? I think you could say it is, for sure. Our nation's security. The CBO's report also notes that its projections are based on its previous demographic, economic, and budget projections released between November and January 5th and don't reflect administrative actions or judicial decisions taken since then that affect immigration, tariffs, and other policy areas. And that's a key point. And I think there is some hope that we can glean for that or from that. Let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll come back momentarily and talk about what could change this outlook reasonably quickly, maybe even in time to avoid the 2028 or 29 ETA of the calamity that could be our national debt and budget. We'll circle right back, momentarily at least, with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We'll be right back.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And just before the break, I had been talking about the current state of affairs with respect to the nation's cumulative deficit. Excuse me. And I said there was a glimmer of hope. Let me get some water. My throat's been giving me a problem. and the glimmer of hope, well, we've got other issues that could, you know, outweigh this glimmer of hope that I'm getting ready to mention. But the glimmer of hope is that we can monetize our significant assets on our nation's balance sheet. And when you understand that we've got 14,000, that's 1,000, empty office buildings, and we've got significant oil and gas reserves that can be monetized quicker than you think, because we could always do what the Saudis did several years ago, which is they basically did an IPO on their oil reserves, and they kept over half ownership amongst the Saudi country. I don't know. I would say the Saudi people. I'm not sure how that would work over there. But in any event, that would be an enormous amount of wealth that could be applied to our debt situation. And then when you also think about the prospect that the tariffs that Mr. Trump is implementing as we speak. And, I don't know what to think. I don't know whether I think they're working. Everybody's got an opinion. And, of course, Mr. Trump's not going to be second-guessed. But it appears they're having the intended effect. In any event, I'm not sure it much matters. I think most of us can agree with the notion that, hey, we've got the world's most desirable group of consumers and businesses that spend money, and the significant imbalance that exists between what we are able to sell into other countries and what they sell into our country, either tariff-free or lower than our tariffs have been to their country, there's a certain equity issue. What's fair and equitable? And it's no longer fair. When you look at how the tariffs have basically, or the export imbalance, it's a 40-year thing, basically. It's taken 40 years to get us really into the high weeds that we're in. And look at what's happened. Just what we've been talking about. The national debt has ballooned over that period. And I'm convinced that, you know, Mr. Trump and the administration's correct in saying that, hey, this has got to end. And thankfully, we've got a president that's willing to put a marker down and say, you know, we're not going forward like this. And, you know, I get frustrated and I get tired of hearing about, you know, especially, you know, north of the border, you know, we're not going to be able to buy certain liquors or, you know, certain maple syrup or whatever it is. You know, I know there's a few things that we don't make some version of in America, and I'm not certainly expert in all these product areas. I couldn't tell you a good whiskey or bourbon from a bad one, but a good wine or a bad wine, but I know we've got wine vineyards, and I can't think of everything else out there. I can't think of anything in my personal scenario that I will be cut off from or have to pay more for that even if it's longer term. I mean, if we're getting such a great deal on it, now, something's probably already amiss in the overall equilibrium of that product supply chain. But bottom line is, I think we've got such a position of strength, and I think you've already seen that. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not the one answering the phone from all these countries that supposedly are calling the White House wanting to cut a deal, but I believe I can tell you this. I'm here in Southeast Asia. They certainly understood, and they were on the phone very quick to try to figure out a way that they can reciprocate the U.S. And my only concern is I'm not sure we need product from a lot of countries. And I think that's more of the challenge. But, you know, we don't necessarily have to get products. You know, as Mr. Trump's explained, come build your factory in the U.S. Hire your employees in the U.S. And I understand that's going to make for some expensive maple syrup and whatever else we're talking about. But what's going to be more expensive? Are we going to wait till our economy tanks in a major depression, the likes of which we've never seen, because we're paying more and more and more of our collective profits out in the form of interest expense? I mean, it's crazy what we've let this devolve to. And then you throw on top of that, oh, I forgot, one of the big areas that we can improve our budgetary outlook. You know, there's two ways to save cost or have a better bottom line. We can either find revenues or we can cut expenses. And my goodness, have you seen some of the expenses that Congress, and I'm sure it's on both sides, but the concept of these NGOs that are getting priority funding out of our boys and girls in Congress, who are then turning around, the NGO or the quasi-nonprofit, whatever you want to call it, and making contributions back to the congressperson or bringing them on first-class flights and excursions, that's just got to stop. I mean, it's hard to fathom that our budget could be in such a bad position. I mean, are these people just absolute, want to be kind here, economically illiterate, where they don't understand how bad, not just how bad it looks, how bad it is that they're on the backs of the taxpayer driving spending that has nothing to do with the man on the street or the taxpayer that's paying the money. It's unbelievable what Doge is finding. And I think it's the tip of the iceberg. I think it's both parties. And I don't know quite sure how to fix it. My suggestion would be that every one of them, both sides of the aisle, resign, and let's get some new representatives in that have our best interest at heart. Because, you know, I know you can say, well, you know, we didn't know. I don't buy that. I think you may have known, but you may have said, well, what can I do to stop it, which isn't much. And, of course, you know, there's so many other things that need to be done. It's all a question of, well, who's going to be the driver? Who's going to do it? And I just think it's incredible what Elon Musk has agreed to do. With his talents and his intellect and whatnot. And it's just, I cannot imagine what the direction our country would still be heading in had we not had a change last November. Anyway, so I mentioned earlier that the one big, beautiful bill that Mr. Trump has been wanting to see has gradually moved forward. It's to the point now where yesterday the House Speaker, Mr. Johnson, was able to say that, you know, I believe we have the votes to finally adopt the budget resolution, the one that President Trump has wanted. Very important to Mr. Trump's agenda. The tariffs and the tax pieces need to mesh together, along with a lot of other things. But in any event, the House, and it's still hard to believe with the tight majority that they have, was finally able to come to an agreement. Even one that Chip Roy, representative, I believe is he up in the Dallas area? I think he is. And I like him. He's a stalwart when it comes to conservatism, but even he finally got over what would normally be some sticking points. But it's all talk at this point. And I'll quote Chip Roy. He told reporters yesterday, "We have now three strong statements from the Speaker, the President, and the Senate Majority Leader about cutting spending. We did not have those 48 hours ago. We do now." Well, you know, as I've said many times, the problem hasn't been the receipts of, you know, taxes, the collections. We've always collected more taxes when we have tax cuts. That's not the problem. The problem is we don't use the money to reduce our massive borrowing. We go spend and we borrow a big chunk of that additional spending even more. It's like we forgot what we said we were going to do with the savings. But in any event, there's so many things they've got to spend the money on. But as usual, the $1.5 trillion cut in spending that they've agreed to is over the next 10 years. Okay. And it's like, you know how tired that makes me? I mean, when you think about nothing is now, except I know something that's now, you know something that's now, the spending will be now in large measure, which means we go borrow more. And, you know, again, the interest just keeps going up, whether the rate goes up or not. The rate is probably a secondary issue in the overall, even though it has the most direct impact. But, you know, the Republicans are still looking for more money for border security, defense, and they've got to raise the debt ceiling again. I think August is when that raises its head again, and that can be a problem. But in any event, they're going to try to pare back spending on the former administration's green energy policies and other sections of the federal government, including entitlement programs. And that's It's going to be interesting to see just where they draw the line on what they'll do with some of the entitlement. And I don't even know that cuts will be necessary if Doge will figure out or identify all the dead people that are still getting Medicare and Social Security. Don't ask me how. And all of the unemployment checks that are going out to people that don't appear to be correct recipients. And you know, it doesn't end. I mean, every day there's a new finding or several that are, you know, at least hundreds of millions, and in some cases billions, of dollars. And so, you know, there is some hope, but there's also a lot of things that could still happen. And, you know, we are thus far managing to avoid a direct involvement in war that could cause our budget to be just an incredible millstone around our neck, or the deficit anyway. And they've still got to get the Senate to agree to their version of the reconciliation framework that they've agreed to. But I don't know. I'm hopeful, and I guess the biggest thing that I can look at to feel better is that at least we've got leadership in place now that understands there's even an issue. The prior administration, I really don't think that there was an understanding at any level as to just how bad things were. And I shudder to think about how bad that 2028 to 29 period would be if we didn't have people that understand. And again, if you've heard any of Mr. Musk's comments, Elon Musk, he's got it. He knows exactly what the issue is, and he's working along with a lot of other people to try to get us back with some sanity in our fiscal operations. Let's see. I think that's probably enough out of that article. So what do we do individually? How do we deal? Let's assume that the leadership currently is not successful, or they're not as timely as we would like to see before we go over the cliff. What can we do to minimize the effect on our personal financial situations? And what I'm going to suggest to you, we've talked about many times on the air, and I'll keep talking about it because it absolutely is the time now. If you don't understand, now's the time to get better and more information than you have now. And start with your own CPA if you think they've got the time and the knowledge base to deal with it. But we're talking about converting our pre-tax retirement funds from the pre-tax status excuse me, that they're in now over to Roth. That's R-O-T-H, a Roth account, either an IRA or a self-directed 401, otherwise known as a solo K, because the impact on your ability to pay your bills for the rest of your extended life, you may have noticed life expectancies are on the rise. Excuse me, my throat again. Life expectancy now for females is 87 to 88, males is 85 to 86. And, you know, you think about that on a monthly basis in terms of what you need to live, pay your bills, have some ability to get the medical care you need, the maybe some aspirational spending. You want to take the grandkids to Disney or things such as that. You want to travel the world. Maybe you want to live overseas part-time, as I do. You might find that's a way to increase your wealth. And in fact, I was just talking yesterday. I was at a restaurant downtown, and a gentleman from, I think, South Carolina was there, and he started up a conversation. And he's a YouTuber, so he sold a company. He had a software company a number of years ago and decided to travel the world. And in any event, he said he did an experiment a while back where he got a job at Walmart, said anybody can do it. It's a standard job. I was not on the executive team. I was a low-level employee, and I didn't have time to talk to him about the details, but maybe I can get him to come on the show at some point. But anyway, he said that in 2 years, he had managed to save $100,000 from working at Walmart. And I'm not sure, I don't know this guy from Adam, not sure how credible, but I asked him, I said, well, have you put that out online? He goes, actually, I have. I've shot the video. I've offered it to a financial planning group that has a podcast, but they just haven't had an interest in it. And I guess, you know, the people that can save $100,000 in 2 years at Walmart probably aren't very good prospect for their financial planning services unless they do it pro bono or gratis. But in any event, he was on his YouTube channel was devoted to news. Let's see, it was New Places News is what he called it. And Southeast Asia was a big part of his travels. And, you know, I think it's fascinating if you go to YouTube and look at sites like his, and a lot of them define what does it cost to live here, whether it's Philippines, Thailand, Vietnam, Malaysia, Indonesia. There's some remarkable places, folks, and we are so spoiled in America. And yet part of the issue here, if you look out over the rest of your life, wherever you're at, I mean, if you're 30-something, the odds are you might not be able to do it. But if you're later in life, maybe you've got the ability to consult or work remotely or teach English, as the case may be. There's a lot of places around the world you can live for a pittance of what you would spend in America. And the quality of life, the medical care, the natural beauty, the people themselves, it's just such a fascinating difference. And I'm not saying, yeah, I will not, just state for the record, I'm not looking to give up my U.S. citizenship. I mean, that's not even a possibility. I understand the U.S., as my Israeli friend told me, he's a U.S. citizen now, but former Southwest Airlines captain, but he used to say, you know, you Americans just don't understand that your citizenship represents the most valuable and amazing country club in the world. And he said, you like to complain about this and that, but at base, and we see it with the immigration system, and I don't want to make it sound like that I necessarily agree. I mean, let's face it, the way that our citizenship was being marketed by the prior administration, where we were desperately looking to find people in their home countries and fly them in, that's just unacceptable. It's crazy to think that we were doing that, and I say we figuratively, it just infuriates me and a lot of other people. And I'm the first one to tell you that we need more immigrants in the U.S. and we need them to be on a payroll paying in to the Social Security and Medicare trust funds that I just discussed. And so don't think we don't want immigration. We do want immigration, but we don't want the ones that are not willing to work or that would rather rob or steal or murder us Americans, that just can't be accepted. And that's what we were doing. And Mr. Trump called it way back the beginning of his first term when he talked about, the types of folks we were letting in. And he was right. It's like most other things he mentions along the way that the media contorts and calls out ends up being correct in the end. But in any event, Roth conversion, key topic. Go back and you can go to our website, look at the podcast page, the archives, talk about it almost every week, and we'll talk about it again on the next show. And we're going to keep hammering on it because even if you don't have your money in real estate, private partnership syndications, you need to think about what's coming. And if your Social Security went down by 25%, and I know the mentors out there that talk about making millions in real estate, and yes, that can happen, and you can lose it too in real estate, as we've just, we're still going through in some cases. And so I get it. You need to diversify, and I would say that there's several options combined that can put more money in your bank account and help you offset whatever's coming, whether it's lower Social Security and retirement payouts, whether it's tax changes, whatever it is. We've got some remarkable options in the world we live. Well, we're here at the end of the show. I thank you for tuning in, and we'll be back on Sunday with the cyber version of the Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. I should have my associate, Mr. AI Wynn, on board, and we'll have hopefully another interesting show, and that's right here on 700 AM or AM 700 at 7 AM. Say that three times fast, here on KSEV, the voice of Texas. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.